It is the 23rd of September 2018. We are in the book of Acts, and we're reading from chapter 27. We have a lot of verses to read, so I'm going to basically be ripping through them, and we'll save our discussions till the end, if that's okay, just for continuity's sake. And when it was determined that we should sail unto Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus's band. And entering into a ship of Adramyttium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And the next day we touched at Sidon. And Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends and to refresh himself. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Let me just take a break there for a second. As I read, you can look along your map and just kind of follow the journey as I read. And I'll try to do that as well. So, verse 5, and we sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia. We came to Myra, a city of Lycia. So look on your map. It's about a third of the way over from the right side. Myra, the city of Myra of the region of Lycia. And you see a little note says, change to a larger grain ship. I'm going to read that in a second. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering, we sailed under Crete over against Salmone, and hardly passing it came into a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia. Everybody see that? Lycia on the island of Crete there in the middle of your map. Fair Havens, that sounds like a nice place, Fair Havens. Verse 9, now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken of by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenice, and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete, and lieth towards the southwest and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Eurocleodon, and when the ship was caught and could not bear into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island, which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksand, strake sail, and were so driven. And we being exceedingly tossed with the tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, sirs, you should have hearkened unto me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and lost. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve, saying, fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told to me. Howbeit, we must cast upon a certain island. But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, That's the Adriatic Sea. You see up in the upper left corner the label for the Adriatic Sea. Here, Adria is that sea. About midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded and found it to be 20 fathoms. When they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into sea, under color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion, to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, "This day is the 14th day that you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you." And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in presence of them all. And when he had broken it, began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they took some meat. And we were all in, in the ship 260 souls. So that's 200. 260. Is that right? A score is 20. So 260. And 16 is another 16, so 76, 276 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. And when it was day, they knew not the land. But they discovered a certain creek with a shore into which they were minded if it were possible to thrust in the ship. When they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves under the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made for shore. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they should, that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. And the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they had escaped all safe to the land. So very interesting, very compelling sea story. And I think it's important. Let me just run through quickly. I'll run through the nautical stuff, having been a sailor man for 20 years, and see if I can give you a little bit of enlightenment to some of the nautical terms being used there. And then we'll go back and talk about the spiritual stuff, if that's okay. All right. So, keep in mind, at the beginning of this chapter, we were just getting done with Agrippa and his judgments towards Paul. Okay, launching means to take off in a boat. So in verse 2 it says, "We launched," meaning to sail the coast. So oftentimes the old sailors would sail along the coastlines because they were afraid of bad weather. They didn't have NOAA, the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration, telling them, "Hey, there's a hurricane coming your way, a typhoon, whatever." So they wouldn't know, and if they would get masts or sails broken, rudders broken, they would have big problems, because in a storm, the way the ship faces is very important in how it either rides before the wind or it rides against the wind. Okay. Sailed under Christos. Okay, so we already kind of taught. Did you guys, were you able to follow the chart or the map there as the sailing story, as I read through it? Okay, let me go to some of these.
There was one island that wasn't on the map that got mentioned, but that's no big deal.
Well, it's probably a smaller island.
Yeah.
Salmoni is mentioned. That's on the eastern side of Crete. That's verse 7. Before they get to Fair Havens and the city of Lycia. All right.
Yeah, the island called Clauda in verse 16. That was the one I didn't see on there.
Yeah, I don't see Clauda either. It must just be a small island. It's not listed there in our map. Okay, so here in verse 11. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and owner of the ship. The master would be the ship's captain. Okay, the ship's captain and the owner, of course, would be a separate person. Haven was not commodious in verse 12. Haven meaning a small port, a place. Commodious meaning it accommodates. It's a good place to winter in. Some ports face the wrong stormy winds, naturally speaking, so the storms come into the harbor and will beat the boats up regularly, so that's not considered a good place to put your sailing vessel into. And of course, then there's other places that are perfectly, you'll go from this tempestuous sea of 10, 12-foot seas outside the bar, and you'll come into port, it'll be like just calm as glass. And you have all this protection from in the harbor. So a safe harbor, okay? It's really amazing, actually.
12 feet is the wave, is that what you said?
The waves and the winds are protected. The natural topography of the land will break the winds, etc. It's really something. So they left there south. So verse 13 says, when the south wind blew softly, supposing they obtained their purpose. Okay, so their ideas or their purposes were to sail, and they needed soft winds, not the great, huge, tempestuous winds that would tear them up. And the reason why, depending on the season, their seasonal wind directions, like here in Kentucky, where we live, in central Kentucky, you get from the southwest, we'll get a prevailing breeze, okay? But then the wind will shift around like it shifted here last couple days from the north. We'll get a nice cool breeze. But you have prevailing winds in a certain area, a certain season. Those things are just all up to God, you know. But so they would know that for the wintertime along the south side of Crete, you wouldn't find a good harbor. It wouldn't be a good place to haven or to port in for the winter. Because in some seas, the Mediterranean is one of them, a small sailing ship, could not sail during a few months of the winter. It's just too bad. Like even the North Atlantic or South Pacific, South Atlantic, gets real so bad that even modern ships have trouble sailing them. And you think, well, how could that big steel ship? Believe me, when the steel starts flexing, you can feel the steel of your ship flexing, and you try to imagine, you know, the pilgrims on these little wooden boats. You go, these storms and these seas are so strong, so powerful, that it would humble a normal person, unless you're a sinner. Unless you're, you know, sinners are not normal. But it's a fearful thing, these seas, you know. Okay, running under a certain island. Okay. Verse 17, when they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall in the quicksand, strike sail and were so driven. So here is a lot of helps. There's these drogues that they used to use, drogue anchors. They're just basically, they hang them off the side of the ship to provide ballast to the ship, and meaning stabilizing. You know, you go up to the Ark Museum, which I guess part my family is planning to go to the Ark soon, but they're these drogue anchors that they suppose they hung off the ark, weighing thousands of tons, that helped stabilize the ship from all this rocking and rolling, okay, that would tear the ship apart. So here, I would suppose these helps that it's talking about, undergirding, it's providing stability underneath the ship. But unless they fall into quicksands, not sure what that's about, they struck their sail and so were driven. Being exceedingly tossed with tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. Okay, so when you talk about being driven before the wind, a sailing ship can only go as fast as the speed of the wind when it's driven before it. When it's full sail, you see the big flying cloud pictures of the old sailing ships, and they're full billowy sails. They're being driven with the wind, but when you the ideal is to sail against the wind. You set your sails and you make your sails like they're aerodynamic. Okay, they're the shape of an airplane wing. So that shape over there creates a low pressure system that moves the ship. And the tighter you can get against the wind, you know, if you've got 10, 15 mile an hour wind, 10, 15 knot winds, the tighter you can get against that wind, the faster you're going to sail. As incredible as that seems, you're going to sail faster against the wind than you would sail with it. Everybody know that? Anybody didn't know that?
Yeah.
Okay, so when you're being driven with the wind, you can only sail as fast as the wind is. And it's actually a little bit slower because of friction and all that stuff, but going against the wind, not being driven by the wind, but going against the wind, you have a faster sailing speed. It's a pretty remarkable difference. Yes.
Maybe you could put one of those on my car.
Yes, maybe I could. Okay, where are we? Okay, with our own hands we cast out, verse 19, the tackling of the ship. The tackling of the ship is things like all the different ropes, mooring lines. It would have a lot of weight to it. Block, tackle. I don't suppose they threw out the anchors. They talk about the anchors later, but the anchors are considered part of the tackle of the ship, the chain and anchor. So depending on the type of ship, they might have a chain anchor if it was big enough, or you might just have a rope anchor, meaning it's a rope tied to a steel anchor. All right. Okay, verse 28, when they sounded and found it at 20 fathoms. A fathom is 6 feet. So that's 120 feet under water underneath the keel. Well, of water. They would account for the keel, excuse me. They gone a little further, sounded again, took soundings, and found 15 fathoms. So that would be 15 times 6 if somebody has their math hats on, Brother Joshua. 90? Oh, that sounds pretty close. Okay, so 90 feet. Then verse 29, then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast 4 anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. So they're putting 4 anchors off the stern. So keep in mind they're being blown by the wind. Now they're trying to stop it from being blown ashore and on the rocks. And so they're putting anchors astern of it. And the ship is blowing by the bow onto this place. So they're not there yet, but they're getting blown down on shallower ground. Okay, so they're trying to slow the ship down and just nestle it up onto the, well, what we're going to talk about in a second here. But as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat in the sea, we'll talk about that in a minute, but they cut off the boat. Paul encouraged them to eat.
They cut off the boat? What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a lifeboat. Every ship will have a lifeboat. Gotcha. Lifeboats. They didn't just use them for life saving. They used it to travel ashore with, because typically, you in that era especially, you would go somewhere and you'd anchor offshore and you'd have to row your boat ashore. Right? And so you'd see the picture of the crew coming ashore, pirates, whatever. And they're coming ashore in these long boats or John boats that are being rowed. Okay? All right. Talked about that. Lightening the ship. The reason why you'd want to lighten a sailing ship when it's about to shipwreck is because the heavier the ship is, the more it's going to get beaten and torn apart. Okay? If it's light, we can get it nestled somewhere. The lighter it is, the farther it goes ashore, right? So the heavier it is, the deeper the keel is, the farther out away from shore you're going to get stuck. That makes sense? So you're going to ground 200 yards off the beach, whereas if you can make it light enough and get 50 yards off the beach, you have a much better chance of surviving. So when you're in a shipwreck, you have a couple things that you have to deal with. The bottom is very rocky, lots of coral, poisonous type of marine life, and you're swimming for your life. And we know this from living in Hawaii. But when you're offshore and you're trying to swim onshore and it's unknown, you don't know where stuff is. Like, we used to go to places where we knew everything was, right? But if you don't know, you're in a storm, you know, big storms, and I'm not trying to scare you, right? And so that's all happening. The waves are going, and you're beating against these rocks now. These rocks, your wave lifts you up and drops you onto a big rock. How would that feel? Not very good. So the fact that 276, is that what I said? Mm-hmm. 276 souls were saved in this shipwreck is an amazing feat, a supernatural feat in my estimation. And some of them didn't know how to swim, right? So, let's see.
So you said there's poisonous stuff in the water?
Yeah, poisonous creatures, yeah, of course.
Stingrays.
Yeah, in the Mediterranean, they have these sea snakes in the Med that are like some of the most deadly. The snakes that bit Paul, very deadly snakes. I mean, like, they bite you and 3 minutes later you're dead. He shook them off in the fire.
And there's some coral you step on.
Yeah, even coral, dude. It's like, kind of like to ocean poison ivy, you know. That's the way it feels, right?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so I shut my Bible. I'm not sure why. Yeah. See if we're enough of the nautical stuff that we have to talk about. Oh, no, it's not. I'm not quite done. Hang on a second. Sorry. 203 score and 16, so 276 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship to get as far to the land as they could. And when it was day, they knew not the land. So they didn't see the land yet. But they discovered a certain creek with a shore unto which they were minded if it were possible to thrust in the ship. So when we say land, you say, well, they didn't see the land. What are you talking about, John? It says it didn't see the land, and now we're talking about creeks and shoreline. Well, land is, when you say land ho, it says there's a landing place. Okay, there's a place to land the ship or to anchor the ship. They saw no place to land. They saw a certain creek, a place where the oceans were going into the shoreline. And here it describes a shore into which they were minded, if it possible, to put the ship into that creek, into that place in the shoreline. And when they had taken up the anchors, remember the four anchors they put down on the stern, they committed themselves, and they loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to wind and made toward shore. So now, the rudder band is the lines that would go back. You've got the guy up here steering the ship, right? And so on, there's a little screw that goes down to a post. I'll just call it a post. And that will have line wrapped around it. Rudder bands will go back to the rudder or rudders. And they will have their own posts. And so I turn this, it turns the rudders the way they need to go as I'm directing the ship with the wheel, the ship's wheel. In fact, my rating badge in the Navy was a ship's wheel, quartermaster, chief. So I have a ship's wheel on my insignia, on my big sparkly stuff, you know. Anyway, where were we? Okay, take a look at hoisted the mainsail. So they threw up their mainsail to have the winds drive them onto shore into this area where there's a creek. Verse 41, falling into a place where two seas meet, they ran the ship aground and the forepart stuck fast. Now, so imagine the seas are coming ashore like this to the creek. And there's a wave that's clapping together where the seas are meeting right here. And so it's actually good. I remember when we were, So where these seas meet, there's a place that the waves smack together. And so if you drive towards that, then you'll get the pushing of that current and of those waves into the middle part of that creek. Okay. The fore part remained stuck fast, remained immovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. Okay, here are the soldiers. Well, that's spiritual, so we'll talk about that later. And so basically that's all the nautical stuff that I wanted to point out. Now we can go back and talk about some of the spiritual stuff if you want, Marvin. Brother, you want to go back to the beginning? Just that's just a natural nautical type stuff that people might find interesting or might find boring.
I liked it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for your appreciation.
I knew you would give us a good 3-hour tour, brother.
3-hour tour. Yeah, 3-hour tour. That's right. Okay, so going back to verse 1, I just say that Julius is an important person here, the centurion. We've talked about it before. A centurion is a soldier who's in charge of 100 men, where we get the word century from. 100 years is a century, but a centurion is a Roman soldier who's in charge of 100 men. Okay, we went through all that. Let's say the next important thing to point out.
It's good okay. to see that Julius gave Paul some courtesy there in verse 3.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big courtesy for a prisoner. Hey, go ashore. Have fun with your friends. What? I'm a prisoner. But I'm going to give you a courtesy. So he may have even been privy to see the court with Agrippa before he took charge of him.
How long was Paul there under Festus? You know, wasn't it 2 years he was
there? Yeah, it was 2 years, I believe, if that's
so
correct.
It may be possible that he had a rapport with some of the centurions here and the soldiers.
Right, even before he took journey.
Right, he had favor with them.
So. Right. So that's a pretty awesome liberty there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We have the disagreement between Paul and the master and owner of the ship. Now keep in mind that an owner of a ship has all this stuff on board the ship. He's trying to get it from here to there. That's how he makes his money. He's transporting stuff, right? So the longer it's sitting in port, the more likely rats will get into it. It'll get infested with mites. Fungus, whatever, mold, will ruin the grain. This is a grain ship we're talking about now, right? So he wants to get that grain to market. He wants to move it off that island because there's not enough people on that island probably to eat all the grain. But so he wants to get that moving over to Italy so he can sell it and make a profit. That's the whole point of owning, being a ship owner, is to make a profit on your investment in the ship. All right. We already talked about that. Interesting name, nomenclature, and stuff in this chapter.
And it looks like it was the verse 11. It looks like it was the centurion's call in verse 11. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the ownership more than those the things which were spoken of by Paul.
Yeah, I wonder why. It does seem like that, doesn't it? Yeah, maybe because he has all the prisoners and the Romans. I mean, they were an empire, and so they're, if you were under military occupation, you could probably just, the occupiers could say, well, you're going to take your ship that you own, and we're going to go here and do this and there. So that's a really good point to bring out, so... So then we have that contention. Then the next big spiritual thing that happens besides all the storms and is that Paul exhorts them to be of good cheer down in verse 22 and gives them a prophecy that will be fulfilled, that no one will lose their lives.
Do you know what the where it says in verse 14, the tempestuous wind called Europa.
Yeah, Europleodon. Sounds like a dinosaur, but there is a wind, I can't remember the name of it now, that a winter wind in the Mediterranean, there's a name for, but it's not that name. Okay. It's probably the same one, but I can't remember the name of that wind from my... I only did one med cruise, so... I did like 7 Persian Gulf cruises, but we passed through the Med and going to, I can't remember the name of that wind. It's probably the same one, though, so that's a good point, too. Okay, so going to verse 22, Paul is exhorting everybody to, hey, be happy. Nobody's going to die. And I get that from an angel of God whom I serve. And it is funny because when they shipwreck, the soldiers tell them, kill the prisoners. In verse 22, they say, wait a minute. And God said nobody's going to lose their life. You're going to kill people? You're going to mess things up here. So
there again, it looks like the favor that Paul got.
Mm-hmm.
Not only saved his life, it looks like it saved everybody's life.
Yep.
Because the centurion says willing to save Paul. It doesn't say anything about anybody else. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Kept them from their purposes.
And it's important there in verse 34 and 35, that Paul is saying, take something to eat to have the strength to get ashore, because you're going to face a battle here for your lives. And then he gave thanks to God when they broke the bread, so that was good. And took some meat, maybe some filet mignon, or some sirloin, right? Some backstrap venison, but no, meat is just food there. We have the soul count in verse 37. We already talked about that. That's about it.
I got a question.
Sure.
Going back to verse 22.
Uh-huh.
When Paul is, and then 23, how he's saying to them what the angel had told him about that no one's going to lose their life.
Right.
And then that same Paul in verse 31 said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Meaning they would die.
That's my supposition.
Yep.
So, do you see, I guess I didn't see a question, but do you see what I'm getting at?
That's contradictory a little bit. Maybe.
Or is the future open? Is the future open to different possibilities? If you obey and stay in the ship, like I'm telling you, you won't die. And when he gave the first prophecy there, or shared, his vision, he said that nobody would lose their life except the ship. But God must have given him more instruction than he first was instructed there, or first that he first communicated there in verse 22 and 23.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. He said, Paul, make sure everybody stays on the ship. If they don't stay on the ship until it breaks up, then it's not going to, they're not going to survive. So,
and I think too that, Paul could be building a case here in verse 22 and 23 by prophesying that the Lord spoke to him. And then in verse 31, it's kind of like, do as I say and you won't die kind of thing. It's like, that's like Jonah going to Nineveh and saying, in 40 days, you're all going to die, right? But then they repented, right? And so it's kind of like, Paul's basically just saying, just do what I say and you're going to live.
But God changed his mind about the threat.
Yeah, the encouragement was there. Hey, be of good cheer, no one's going to die. And then in verse 31, hey,
there's a way we have to do this that God's instructed me. So
just because God says you're going to be saved, but doesn't that mean we have to obey Him? And so, I would just speculate. We have to speculate that Paul is just being obedient to the Holy Ghost.
Well, I think it's a little more in speculation. I think it's deduction.
Yeah.
I mean,
deduction. Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a better way to think of it. We're not speculating. We're just deducting, and the Holy Spirit teaches us things. So. Otherwise, it would look like a contradiction, wouldn't it? Which is why you brought it up.
Well,
that's a good question.
Not necessarily a contradiction, but it just seemed like how he was talking.
Hey, be a good cheer. Nobody's dying today. Well, I would submit to you that, hey, for the saints of God, nobody's going to die. You're going to enter the kingdom of God. But you got to do these things to get there. There's a narrow way. You got to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. There's, you know, you have to abide in Him. You have to produce much good fruit. You have to do all these things that God expects us to do, to labor for.
And by those sailors who were wanting to leave the ship, that wasn't an act of faith in what the angel had said.
Yeah, that was an act of doubt.
Saved.
Right.
That was, ooh, if we stay on this ship, we're going to die, so let's get off.
Right. Yeah. Now imagine now, they're still in this tempestuous storm. They're going out of a big ship that they're scared in into a much smaller ship that the storm is just going to kill them. It's just, there's no doubt about it. You don't put out a small boat like that in a storm that a big ship can't handle. So.
And to build the case, we're kind of doing building blocks here. If you keep reading, after they did what Paul said to do, then he said, come on, take some meat and eat. And then it says here, a little later on, they were all good cheer after they took bread and meat.
Well, weren't they fasting or something for 14 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd feel pretty good after you haven't eaten anything for 14 days and now you get something to eat. You'd feel pretty energized, right?
And not dying, because I did what Paul told me to do. Right. Staying on the ship. Right. I didn't die. I just had some good food.
Right.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, and then okay, so I don't have anything else. If you guys don't have any other questions, we'll wrap it up and call it a teaching or a reading. Any other questions, anybody? Okay, please.